One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down, real low. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
We want to thank Factor for sponsoring Play Retro. Get Factor and enjoy eating well with fresh, flavor-packed meals delivered straight to your door and ready in just 2 minutes. No prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/retro50 and use code retro50 to get 50% off.
Hello?
Want to see me change the channel with my tongue?
Where are you?
Open the drapes.
One TV-obsessed gecko. Revolutionary 3D graphics. It's Gex, Head of the Gecko.
Gosh, dude.
Oh, it was a Scream parody. Get it?
Yep. They knew what was up. They looked
and then
the
he
90s.
Flashes her. Great.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Play Retro. I am Scott Johnson, one of your hosts, and I like snarky lizards as much as the next guy, even when they're selling insurance policies. But here's the deal. I'm not willing to buy the 3DO just for a stupid lizard meant to take on Mario and Crash Bandicooters. Wait, what? Oh, it's on PlayStation and Saturn? And they're reviving it for modern systems this year? Well, then never mind. Inject the Gould into my veins.
Ooh, the guy Gould. Yeah. Gross.
Yep.
Oh, and I'm your other host, Brian Dunaway, and I'm not Dana Gould. And this is not the 90s, but if I were a gecko trapped in a TV wonderland and forced to whip and quip my way back to the real world, well, I would just kick up my sticky feet and look for the nearest Baywatch babe in lemon drop martini, sour, not stirred, and enjoy the ride from my Barco lounger. It's the 90s, baby.
Yeah, it really was the 90s, and we're going to talk about Gex. Yeah, that's right. The big G-E-X, yo. He's coming back. We're getting a whole like remaster of the first three. Coming to Switch for confirmed. I don't know about other platforms, but you know, we asked ourselves,
it's
well, why? What was
to
the
be
deal?
Everything.
It probably is everything, if I had to guess.
It's it's running on that engine they've been making these things with called the Carbon Engine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like everything. Just it's the PlayStation system already works on there. All they got to do is port in the I guess whatever freaking assets they have. The assets.
Well, they claim
they gotta go get Dana Gould and stuff him in there.
Yeah, they probably get new lines out of him. I assume he's not doing much. But
there's a lot of references that are benign and kind of hilarious. And then there's some stuff.
A little troubling, some of it. Troubling.
90s.
Yeah, early 90s. We didn't know shit about shit. But anyway, that's all coming up. We're going to talk about that. Before we get into it, though, let's talk about our week in retro. Been thinking a lot about these retro handhelds that are coming out like one after another. Yeah. For some reason, we're just like awash with it. Ambernic kind of out there very prominently. The Mio, what is it?
Mio Minis and stuff.
The Mio Minis. Yep. Mm-hmm. A couple other brands popping their head out. Most of these are, a lot of Chinese manufacturing and that kind of stuff going on. But everybody seems to be kind of hot on the idea right now. And I think we're about to have a bit of an explosion, maybe even a bubble of hardware solutions. And it's got me thinking, though. None of these places, correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, give me a good example where I'm wrong, but it feels like most of these devices have nobody working there that's really great with software. You know what I'm saying? Like it's not, I don't mean the ROMs. The ROMs are what they are. It's already dubious and weird, but like, the interfaces and UIs and the custom stuff they built for their little UX or their Unix like front ends or Linux front ends are all so janky and freaking bad, and we're all installing something better on top of it because it's never good enough. Why? Why can't one guy hire one guy and be focused on that, make it amazing, and maybe know two languages in your life so you can talk to the rest of the world, and it isn't all really horrible translations in any other language you want to put it in. Like, I just think that should be a priority since that's the stuff you're playing on there.
So that is a great question, and I hadn't thought about it in that framing, but from what I learned about 3DO this week, which I did not know a lot about until I started playing Gex, I knew it existed.
Yeah.
I think it's all going to lie all in the same area. The 3DO was more of like a specification. They had ships and stuff, but they weren't the manufacturers. They were selling the plans and stuff and some of the hardware components to third parties such as Panasonic Sunstar or something. Anyway,
Samsung,
so it was selling to them.
I think it was Samsung.
And as a result, those manufacturers like Panasonic, they were having to make all their profit up front because they weren't making money on the software. So they were pricing these consoles against, you know, PlayStation, who's like taking a loss, you know, Sega taking a loss.
Right.
And they're trying to make all their money up front. Yeah. Same with these pieces of hardware from all these manufacturers. They're just selling a piece of hardware one time. That's it. They're done. They're not making any more money afterwards. So setting up someone doing software, unless they're planning on doing some kind of service, you know, where they're providing something, but they don't own none of the software. They don't own none of the games themselves, right? Mm. They're not selling the games. Man, if they could get tied in with like AntStream, who's killing it right now with the Xbox deal they just signed, right? That's a software service where you can play a bunch of, you know, Phil Spencer's so excited. He's like, hey, we're bringing all like 1,300 games, retro games to the Xbox. And it's like, hold on now. What you really bring in their deal, right? Their little cloud gaming thing, which is cool. And I love, but you're right. That's a really good question. I think that's the reason why the software sucks. They're not making any money off of it. They're actually enticing us to buy this hardware with stuff they don't really own. You know, it's like, we're going to send you out this card with a bunch of software that does.
Yeah. But again, I'm not even talking about ROMs. I just mean like UI and the built-in garbage that is, they think is good.
What's the point? It's like the community's already picked it up. They don't care. Like, right. They're just trying to sell hardware. So they're trying to keep coming out with new ones. But I'm with you to have a really good experience. I would love if somebody would do what you're saying.
Just pay the garlic guy. Pay the garlic guy a little money. Just a little scratch on the side.
Some money.
And then he'll make you an Ambernic OS that's decent. It'll basically be garlic. All right.
Yeah.
And then you're done. You're good. You're golden for the rest of your life. All right.
For the rest of your life.
Because I like, once garlic's on there, I'm good. I need no other nothing. I really don't. It's that good for me. I'm just like, yep, this does everything I need. I know the underpinnings of it are still freaking RetroArch and all that. I know that stuff already. I don't have to think about it. It just works and it's great and it looks cool and I can scan it and all that stuff. Anything
else? A great question. Would the garlic guy have to start from scratch? I haven't looked deep into the history of garlic. I don't know if it's built on other open software. Mm. You know, there's different licensing. Some allow you to make derivative works and some, you know, a little more difficult. So I don't know. I haven't looked deep into it. But that's a really, you make a really good point, and it would really, it means something to me because I feel like we've become the software support, right? Mm-hmm. Here at Play Retro, because we've encouraged people to get these handhelds and they're like, hey man, how do you do this? And I'm like, all right, we're going to help you out here.
It's a little bit like buying a new computer and then them going, we just threw whatever on there. Okay, well, let me go find an OS that's better for this computer I bought. Like, I don't know. It just feels janky. I need them to think about that some, you know?
Right. We need you to pump the brakes and think about it. So, like, there are a couple of different companies, like you said, Ambernic, Miu, and the Retroid. Retroid seems to be a different kind of company. I can't confirm that yet. I haven't got a Retroid in my hands yet, but it seems like it's got a little bit different philosophy than Ambernic. Ambernic is absolutely just killing it with the hardware, getting out solid hardware and just in every level you can imagine, because there's people that's like, $70 is too much. And then the other people are like, $120 is too much. And they just kind of, they're like providing it almost every level. Almost any level you can imagine of how much you would spend, Ambernic's got something somewhere in that list.
The Retroid Pocket S2S just launched yesterday.
Yes, yes.
And I really like the look of this thing. It's the Scream one in particular, I think I would probably get.
And I think the Retroid, don't they stick with just Android? I have a friend of mine who has one, and I'm not sure about that. But it seems to be a little bit different. Like I said, I think there's a little more support. I really like that metal one. I've seen that one before. I've looked at it, too.
Yeah, metal edition is really nice. Expensive, or more expensive, I guess.
More expensive. But it could be just more of the same. I don't know. I haven't got there. They seem to be more focused on... you know, the higher end stuff, like a lot of the Ambernic stuff we've been getting, sub 100, they usually only go up to about the PlayStation 1. They only go about that high and then nothing above that. A lot of these Retroid devices, since they run Android, they go up to like the, you know, the N64 and I think even the PS2. I don't think there's anything out there doing the PS3 right now, but PS2 is pretty decent. That library and that thing is huge. Yeah, so
it's pretty good. Want this flip. This Retroid flip, pocket flip, they call it.
Yeah, it looks like looks like a 2DS kind of look.
Yeah, it's 2DS wide like a 2DS. That's a good point. But it gets your SP juices flowing a little bit. My only complaint is that it's not out yet.
Other than that,
it's still on pre-order. On it.
But you are right. I have seen the handheld market just explode over the past year because the Steam Deck is exciting. And if you have the money to do it, it's so exciting, but it's really priced outside. If you're just almost like, I want to play retro games, I don't want to be portable. The Steam Deck's kind of overkill. You know, the Asus one is overkill. They're all just kind of overkill. This is a good price range for most people, you know, sub 100, 120.
That's why I think the ones we got, the RG35XXs are just.
Yeah.
The perfect little handheld.
Spot on. Does what I want.
It is Android 11, not anything. And I don't know why Android as an OS for retro bugs me, but I don't like it as much as other stuff.
It bugs me a little bit too. And the reason why is because it has to have apps and you have to go to the app stores and you have to download the apps individually. And I feel like I'm in the Google economy.
I don't want to be in a phone. This is the whole point is I want to go back to something that's not a effing phone. Like Garlic, I got this cool pixelated Garlic OS interface skin that I use. And it makes me feel like I'm in Happy Town, Retro Town, not some converted phone. I don't want that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, that's what it does. It do what it do. And Android's just better at making use of those mobile processors than Linux. Linux wasn't really built from the ground up like Android was to really make, you know, full use of that. So, you know.
I know it's better for, you know, GameCube and Wii.
Oh, absolutely.
All that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard that before. But
it's amazing that the Wii stuff works. Of course, GameCube works. Duh.
Yeah. I don't know what it is about. And I know Android forks from Linux. I know that, chat. That's not what I'm saying. They're very different now. Okay.
Yeah.
They're not what they were.
They have gone a long way against. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's still some base there, but yeah.
This isn't 2006 when they're preparing to launch Android. All right. We're way past that.
Yeah. Yeah. It does use the Linux kernel. Correct.
Yeah. Of course. You know, Mac OS uses, Unix, as a kernel, but that's all changed.
It's a BSD system.
Windows uses Bill Gates's underwear. I have no idea what it uses. Brian, what did you get up to? You did some stuff there. What'd you do?
Did some stuff. Well, I have this clicky keyboard, mechanical keyboard, and it just felt wrong not to have at least some kind of retro mouse to go along with it to hook into my Mr. FPGA. I was playing that Warcraft. Was it last week?
Yeah,
last week. It's only been a week since we did Warcraft.
Only a week.
But that's right, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so I was kind of disappointed that I had to use my modern mouse with my clicky-click keyboard playing Warcraft. So I went out and I looked and I found this Cherry mouse. It's that old IBM beige-looking color that you would see. Yeah. It does have a third mouse wheel. It comes with a USB, and it even has the old PS2 type connector, not for your PlayStation, but for the
PS2 serial connector. Yeah.
Serial connector. There you go. That's what I'm looking for. And I ordered it and I was like, wait a minute. I thought it looked really cool. One thing I didn't look for is to see if it had a mouse ball.
Oh, it does not have a mouse ball. It's optical. Lame.
It's optical. And I was like, at first I was like, oh man, that ain't retro. And I was like, and then I was like, wait a minute. I don't care about no freaking ball. ball's a pain in the ass.
It is a pain in the ass. You got to take it out and wash it in soap. It's such a pain in the ass.
Such a pain. That's a technology I don't miss.
Yeah.
I don't have any. If I got one with a ball in it right now, I'd probably just take the ball out and roll it around the ground. Because what I used to do anyway. Mm. That's how mine got so dirty. But yeah, this is pretty neat. It's a little cherry mouse. Very simple. Just two button mouse. It's got a third mouse wheel scroller thing, which is, you know. I was almost kind of said, I really want to scroll that. I really want to go old school, you know, just two buttons, maybe even that Mac with the three button thing. And I was like, nah, this is good enough, Brian. Stop it. It's close enough.
Did I show you that Honeywell one I had? I think I've shown you. Maybe.
I think I've watched the, didn't you put like a clip or something?
I did a little YouTube retro thing about it.
Yeah. Blip or patrons or something.
Yeah. The Honeywell, let's see, mouse. What was that called?
And if you ever follow me on Twitter or anywhere, you'll know that I program. Well, you may know this. Hey, I'll tell you this right now. I program by day mostly. And I hate the mouse as the input device. I feel like it is.
It just slows you down, man. It just slows you down.
It's just out of all interfacing devices that I have, I like the mouse the least. It's necessary lots of times because, you know, otherwise you have to have a touch screen or something. But, mm-hmm. God, I hate it. I hate it so much.
So there
much.
It is
like
up on the screen right now. You see these two little pads?
Is that a two-ball mouse?
So those aren't balls. Those are little feet. And okay. They have a little bit of give to them. But it's both. My guess is one is doing Z-axis. One is doing Y.
Okay.
But together,
so like, does it lean? I guess it says friction, right? It's friction,
but it's also... Where you're moving, I guess these wheels spin a little, but where you're moving, it just knows and translates. I don't know how it does it, but it used to be my favorite damn thing ever.
That's smart because I don't understand the technology behind this, but looking at it, that's really smart because one of the biggest problems with the mouse ball before we went into optical, which was, you know, more digital, is the fact that there's nothing to spin. It's not going to spin that dirt underneath. So it's just taking like this friction. Did it feel like a regular mouse though?
Yeah, it worked like a mouse. It didn't have any problems. The one big difference was
nothing.
No, in fact, it was the big advantage was unlike the ball mice, which is what I graduated from to this.
Right.
It never got dirty. I mean, it got dirty, but it never clogged up. It never snagged. It never did any of that crap.
It looks like somebody shoved a couple of Xbox thumbsticks. Almost like at the surface level. And it's like recessed into it. That is interesting.
It's really weird. And they were hard to get. We ordered them as much as we could. I used to work for this computer company. And people loved them. Up at the university, all our clients were like, I got to get more of that mice. We want to have our whole place using them. Because at the time, ball that was it. Now, why this didn't keep evolving or take off.
It was probably right at the end of life. It was probably ready to... We were about to go optical, probably.
Probably, yeah. That's my thinking. Because why would you have, you know, why go all mechanical if you can go optical?
Yeah.
But I'll never get rid of that mouse. I love it.
Yeah. One more drop. I got a, one update on my Sega Master System exploration. I was not satisfied with how the audio video was coming out of this machine. There's two outputs. There's just the AV output. Which is like a whole bunch of pins, kind of like your Sega Genesis. And then you got your coaxial side. I was going out of the coaxial side and capturing on HDMI. I didn't care for how that was looking. And I got an adapter that goes out of the AV output and into HDMI. And I can run this now. I can run it dual. I can run it on a CRT out through my coaxial. And I can run the AV out to my HDMI for capture.
Nice.
And man, it looks much, much better. Of course, but it looks a lot better. Doesn't sound as good though. A little disappointed in that. So I'm going to give a full review on this little device eventually because I'm going to hook up to Sega Genesis as well because it does both. But yeah, I was a little disappointed that the audio was so low. I'm going to maybe check with tech support or something.
Yeah, that's weird. I wonder if they.
I doubt they have any tech support. I'll probably call and be like, "Hey," and it's like, "There's not going to be anybody."
You know where they'll have it is like Brazil because they're still buying these, right?
Oh, that's right. They're still buying them in Brazil.
Yeah. They still needs them in Brazil. But yeah, there's probably something out there where people are like, oh yeah, the reason for that is the analog audio signal goes up your butt and out your hole. And like they're going to have
Mr. Lucas, what are you doing there?
Yep. That'll happen. Well, I'm excited because I know you love that thing and I'm glad that it's working.
Oh, man, I can't believe how I got it on my desk right in front of my keyboard. And I was trying to get it pulled up. So if anyone hasn't seen it,
Like you do.
Man,
anybody who knows anything about your Sega Master System, you put it right in front of your keyboard.
Yeah, I put it right for my keyboard. It's like right in front of everything. It's taking center stage.
Yeah.
And I just can't pull it down. I keep going, okay, I got to put this in this position. Its position is behind me in the Sega section that I have behind me. So Sega I have a whole section for Sega. Yeah. I just can't demote it just yet.
What's the likelihood of having like a Switch that'll let you switch between all those consoles?
Absolutely.
TV?
Absolutely. I actually do have a Switch. I've just got to rewire everything back up. I've got several Switches so I can just flip through them and pull it right up and stream it. But it's right in front of me. It's so pretty.
Yeah, look at it. It's sexy and hot and laying there just looking cool.
It's hot. Matter of fact, right now, I don't even want to talk to you anymore. I'm going to turn on Shinobi. Yeah.
Good night,
everybody.
I'm
going to go play some games.
Yep, good night. All right.
Good night, everybody.
Just kidding. We're going to talk about Gex, and we're going to do that now. So stand by.
Shall we play a game?
Sure, why not? Let's play the game Gex, G-E-X, like short for Gex. Gecko, kind of, you know?
Right, like a nickname for a gecko.
It's a nickname. That's a great way of putting it. And Gex is this platform video game series. This was developed by Crystal Dynamics. Little Utah connection. A bunch of the dev happened here in the state because they had an office here that did most of the work on it. I know their 3D stuff, like their little weird intro where he's on the couch talking about TV and everything. That was all made here. Anyway, Adia tells this adventure of an anthropomorphic gecko named Gex, and he served as the mascot of Crystal Dynamics for a while. I think they wanted to.
Yeah. And as 3DO, I mean, like everybody wanted a piece of the gecko.
Oh, yeah. That was going to be the hot thing. It was basically to compete with your Mario and your Crash Bandicoots and your whatnots.
Yeah.
And you could argue it didn't exactly succeed in that way. But anyway, it became part of their logo until like 2000. So there's that. Right. In North America, Gex is voiced by comedian Dana Gould, but you may not have known this. In the United Kingdom, different dude.
Different guy entirely. As a matter of fact, I didn't know that until this week. Turns out it's the guy, and it's really weird. Dana Gould, very young guy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he did the voice on Gex 1, but Gex 2 for sure is a different voice actor. It was the guy who plays as the Sorting Hat on Harry Potter.
Oh, so no way,
the
dude.
The Sorting Hat.
Really? Yeah, yeah. That's actually pretty cool.
His name is British actor, comedian Leslie Phillips.
Leslie Phillips.
Yeah.
I think he just
took
died.
Over.
I think that guy just died. Hold on.
He probably did. He was trying to sort. He was trying to sort some new wizards, and anyway, it didn't go well.
The reason the reason I say that, I'm pretty sure. Last year, November of last year, he passed away.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
So they just didn't. Oh, he didn't even get to hear the announcement. I don't know if it was going to bring him back anyway. They kind of like, they kind of moved on. He was the voice actor Leslie Phillips was for the British version of this. He did Enter the Gecko, which is the second one. And then Danny John Jules does the acting in Deep Cover Gecko. And this is all in the British area. Not us. Not us. In the U.S. market, it was all... Dana Gould.
Yeah, Dana Gould. Let me give you an example of what that sounded like.
It all started so simply. I had just finished my usual morning routine of nude funkercise, fired up the Barca Lounger, and grabbed a quick bite to eat, and prepared to watch some serious tube.
Yeah, here's some gameplay. So basically, the game was a side-scrolling lizard game.
Right.
A lizard simulator. And like we said, they were attempting to, if not succeeding, definitely attempting to be the next platform sensation.
Yeah. And this was 3DO's chance to shine. And Panasonic finally got some of these 3DOs, after much fanfare, into the stores. And when it were first launched, only had one game, and it wasn't Gex, but Gex would come later, and he would go on to be, I think he was the top selling game on the 3DO.
Oh, if not, on the 3DO ever? That, I think maybe version of Road Rash and FIFA did really well.
Those also did really well, as indeed.
Because EA was all in on this thing. EA, it was basically their console. Like, for all intents and purposes, they were making it the EA console. It was in partnership with Panasonic and other manufacturers. 3DO 2 was supposed to happen, never did.
And you may have never played this. If you're listening out there, you may never even played the first Gex, because He was kind of late in life for platforming, because here we are, PlayStation 1 era, 3DO, and we were moving on from a lot of these 2D platforms.
I mean, 3DO was first, right? I think.
Right. 3DO was like about a year before the PS1 version, and they were focusing their exclusive deals with the 3DO. But after us, we'll have to talk about 3DO completely. I did not realize that it was actually affordable. I didn't realize there was many sold. I kept getting confused with the Philips CDI. I don't know why I did that. But when I started really looking into it, I'm like, oh, these actually sold fairly well. They didn't do fantastic, but they did well enough. And you can pick up a 3DO, you know, sub $200 for a system complete with everything. You know, and the games they made, they sold a, you know, not a butt ton, but it sold enough that they're not so rare that they've become expensive or out, you know, to the price that you couldn't at least experience. Because at $200, that's a freaking steal. Because this thing, when it came out, Panasonic was pushing this thing in 95 was like $600 or $599. So it is a freaking steal at $200, man. Oh, they're giving them away.
Yeah, they were pretty cheap compared to, I think they were just making a real play. They really wanted to see if they could upset the market and take Nintendo down a notch.
And that was it was a totally different marketing idea. Like I said, I didn't know that 3DO was like a standard and that they were reselling to all these.
Yeah, anybody could make it. The idea was like, it's almost like DVD as a standard or VHS or whatever, which, you know, it's not the first time it's been tried in games.
Right.
But it's maybe the biggest attempt, and I think it maybe was the one that proved this doesn't work.
Now Gex, the game worked really well because I'd only played a few minutes of the original side-scrolling Gex myself. And once I really dug into it, I was like, man, this is a really competent and sometimes really difficult and challenging 2D platformer. And it should be, because it was at the end of most of this stuff. We're moving into the PlayStation 1. Everybody was starting to do more 3D. And Gex wouldn't stay two-dimensional for long. But, man, his tail whipping and his abilities to get power-ups and shoot fireballs out of his mouth and climb walls. He uses all the Gex the Gecko's abilities, right?
Yeah.
Geckos can bounce their tails, right? Is that a thing?
Yeah, that's a I don't know if they can they? I don't know. I may have just made that up. I don't know if they do or not.
I think they made that up.
Yeah, but that may have been made up. But now that you say.
But I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and I was, you know, it was a time, especially in the 90s, where everything was a sound bite, right? We were just all walking around sound biting our favorite TV shows from days gone, right?
Do you want to hear some of that? I got some Gex sound.
You got some bites from Dana Gould to give us his best impression of this stuff.
Let's give you a taste, everybody. Here you go.
For me, you shouldn't have one for me and one for me. Sweet like candy. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. Lolly, 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 get your adverbs here.
It's really, it's actually kind of freaking annoying and shitty. I don't like the VO at all.
I've
never
terrible.
Liked and, it. It's always been bad.
But that was, that's Rosette. That was commonplace in our cartoons. It was commonplace in, you know, in just our everyday culture of just, you know, sound biting stuff. I mean, SNL was experiencing a pretty big uptick, and we were all walking around using catchphrases. All these comedians were using a lot of catchphrases. Everybody had a catchphrase, right?
Yeah, that was a thing. I mean, we still do. I think we still do it. It's just more memes now. I mean, they were kind of memes then. That's kind of what they were.
No, they were absolutely. They're verbal memes that we were using because Arnold and Stallone and all these big blockbuster films, and we're walking around, you know, kicking out one-liners and imitation. We had to do it.
Let's see what this is. Hold on.
Note. I think you enjoyed that. Here I come, Petticoat Junction. I'll take new levels for 20, Alex.
It's just so...
Petticoat Junction, even us in the 90s were like, that's a far reach, man.
I still don't know what that is. I don't know what that is.
Petticoat Junction, remember that? Petticoat Junction.
No, none of it. I don't know. I don't know the damn thing about it.
Yeah, it was a couple of decades prior to that. Anyway, even those were kind of far-reaching, but it was... I enjoyed it because it really spoke to me. I was a child who grew up on TV, and I knew a lot of these references. And the whole idea is that Gex, I read the 3DO manual, Scott.
Yep.
Gex lost his dad.
Yep.
And he's kind of retreating away from everything. And he starts watching TV all the time. And this is kind of where this comes
into
play.
Yeah, he becomes a TV addict. It's where he spends all of his time. So now he's got to go into, what is it, Media World or what do they call it?
Right, Rez pulls him in. And so this is where Gex really shines. Gex has these variations on themes, and each level is thematic to that. Like the first level, I think it's horror.
Yeah, it's like a Halloween
cemetery, kind of thing. I think is what it's called.
Yeah. It's very, very Halloween. The music in it reminds me of, like, I don't know, Castlevania or something.
Right. You got Splatterhouse guy coming at you, you know. So I mean, there's just it's just loving to that genre. And it keeps going on, you know. You got Toonland, Jungle Isle, Kung Fu Fuville,
yep.
Or Fuville, Fuville.
Fuville.
Which is like a martial arts. And if you grew up during the 70s, you know that martial arts movies were on TV like constantly, early 80s.
Oh yeah, repeats and stuff. Just there was no getting away from it. You heard it all the time.
No.
Game was not going to be long for just a single console. I mean, yes, 3DO wanted this to be their big showcase, but bad news. Sony was in town, and these guys said, you know what? 3DO is not really working out. We're going to put this on the PlayStation.
So, yeah, Sony came in and said, $2.99.
Yeah.
And walked off the stage, and and that's when 3DO said, poop. It was really interesting to watch it. I watched a full documentary on 3DO and its rise and all the fervor. I remember there being a lot of buzz about the 3DO, and then it just failed at level 1, 2, 3, and they just kept trying to do things. And you may only know 3DO at this point from some of those PlayStation later games, like the was it the Sarge's games or whatever they were? Army Men.
Yeah, the Army Men games. There was also a very cool game, ended up on PlayStation also, but it was this Return Fire. Oh, I love that game much. Yeah. My favorite 3DO game was Return Fire. And then when I was sad when 3DO was getting dumped on, and then I heard, oh, Return Fire's coming to PlayStation, and then I was happy again because that game rocks. So good. We've talked about Return Fire.
Ran to PlayStation as quick as they could.
Oh, yeah, they did. And you know what? Crystal Dynamics would become a really important, cool developer, and they would get bought by Square Enix at some point. They were part of the whole Eidos acquisition. I think that's all. They're now back to being independent, I think.
There's a company. Oh, I'm having trouble remembering who it is. There's a company who is purchasing a bunch of these older, purchasing all these studios, and they're essentially just money handlers, and they're letting these studios
Embracer Group. That's them. And the thing is, Crystal Dynamics does not own the Gex IP anymore.
Okay.
They do. The holding company does.
Right. Correct.
Which is doing this remake.
But they're being, that's exactly what they did, if I remember correctly.
Because Crystal Dynamics is busy working on, you know, new Tomb Raider shit. That's what they do now.
Yeah.
They're Tomb Raider.
That's what they do.
Yeah. They got their own big deal going on, of course, and we've already had a whole show on Soul Reaver and Legacy of Kain.
I might have played just a minute of Soul Reaver on one of these PlayStation discs, because I don't know if you remember, there was a time when you would get a game and it would come with like two or three other demos.
Oh, I love that! Yeah,
one of these was just like that, and I got to play a little Soul Reaver demo on it.
I miss demo discs, but I guess we kind of have that in the form of just regular demos now. So
just regular demos. You just download it.
Just download it,
and then you get a refund. Yeah. It's just so much easier now.
There's a couple of games coming out here soon that I'm really excited about, and I'm thinking I should really play them now, and I can. You just go play demos. But there was something about getting a magazine or going to the software, etc., and walking out with a black sided one sided disc that was just full of stuff you haven't tried yet. I love that.
Yeah, it was free. Yeah. Free junk. Man, there's such drug dealers.
There are drug dealers. Those bastards. They're just trying to hook us on their sweet koosh.
Sweet koosh.
Koosh.
Speaking of Gex.
Yeah.
and his sweet koosh.
Yeah.
What'd you think about the platforming in Gex?
It's all right. It's passable. I wouldn't say it's the tightest experience I've had. And I played this again. I think I played the PS1 version, because I couldn't find a 3DO emulator that I liked.
I love the wall walking because I'm like, you don't think about it. You're like, because there's so many different ways to navigate around. And I'm just.
It's cool. It's like it really changes the way you think about flat 2D. It's almost 2.5D, because it's like, here's two surfaces. One of these you run on, and the other one you crawl on flatly.
Yes. And these are sprites, and they're like Donkey Kong Country, where they've been pre-rendered in 3D, and they look,
lots more frames of animation though than
so many more.
I will give them credit for that. They deserve a mention because it's pretty good. I don't like the bonus levels. We're watching one right now. I hate these.
Oh, I hate bonus levels. One of these games had terrible bonus levels, by the way.
That's an era of bonus levels I'm happy to leave behind us. I hated all that. Sonic bonus levels are the worst. Yeah. At least Mario would go into a pipe and just eat a bunch of coins, and that was a bonus level. I can deal with that.
Right.
But they always forget, like, what's actually fun about platforming? Not this. Okay.
Not racing the clock in your collectathon bullshit.
Yeah,
no,
I don't like it. I don't like it. But they did use a lot of frames of animation, which seemed really neat at the time and innovative. PlayStation version was even better in that regard. And, whatever. Gex kind of came and went, and I thought that was going to be it. But no, Brian, that wasn't it.
No, what? No, there's more. There's more to the story of this gecko.
There was going to be more. Well, first of all, there was this.
Oh, jeez.
Well, that's pretty.
Game Boy Color got a game.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk a ton about this game, but it's obviously a very watered down experience.
Yeah.
It's not what you bought when you bought full blown Gex. But if you had a portable, you had the handheld. This is okay. It's all right.
Yeah. It's all right. Yeah, this is Enter the Gecko, right? Is this the...
This was called... Was it just Gecko? Or no, just Gex?
It's Gecko. I'd love it to just be called Gecko. So talk about the Chinese company selling handhelds. That's what they would call it.
They just call it Gek. And then just assume we were okay with it.
Right.
The Game Boy version was 98. It was later.
Yeah, I think that one is the... It's kind of confusing because Gex is about to go into the 3D world because everybody was clamoring for it. Yeah. But the Game Boy was still, 2D world. So I think, if I remember correctly, I played this one, I believe, and I believe this is the Enter the Gecko version of this game. But it looks a lot like the first one because everything is, side-scrolling, two-dimensional instead
of 3D. It's nice, though, because it's pixel art, and I think I like it better.
Because
that nice look, that pre-rendered look, I know chunky. Was a big thing for a hot second, and it was like, hey, look at this, Donkey Kong's never looked so good or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember at the time thinking, it does look really good, but I think in retrospect, I really don't like pre-rendered graphics. I much prefer this.
It certainly has its own flavor, and
it's my biggest problem
It holds up better. How about that? It holds up better.
This aesthetic absolutely holds up better. And it holds up better for a whole bunch of reasons. One of them is the rendering technology for pre-rendered has gotten way better. So the old stuff just looks old and bad.
Yeah.
Whereas this still has, there's an art to pixel graphics. Like it still has that art to it. And I don't know if this game's any good. I didn't play this week. But it's all right. It's okay.
It's all right. I mean, if you got a Game Boy Color, this wouldn't hurt your collection any.
It wouldn't.
It's all right.
You wouldn't hate yourself for it.
Nah.
Okay. Also, let's hear a little more of this. Hold on. Volume.
What's that, Mr. Bug? Timmy's trapped down a well?
I gotta make.
Okay, I'll take a shower.
He's just so...
I mean, I'm not 99.9% clean? Are you after that old sandwich?
You would definitely not get that out of the Game Boy Color.
No, you would not, sir.
Love it.
All right, let's talk about the next game in the list, which is Gex Enter the Gecko. This is 1998's PS1, Saturn, and N64 3D platformer, and it sounded a bit like this.
Since retiring from the public's eye, I have resigned myself to a life of solitude. For 2 years, I started my day watching Kung Fu Theater. Days, then weeks blurred into one long, greasy telethon.
Greasy. I like the term greasy.
Yeah, I do too.
This is interesting. That's not Dana Gould.
Gex is still the same, right? He's still a slacker.
Is that him, though? Is that Dana Gould? That's somebody else.
Yeah, that's Dana Gould still. Correct. Okay.
He's still in there doing that. All right.
He's still doing that. Yeah. Now, this is the one where they started using the different actors for, a couple of different regions. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And in this one, you got they actually decided to apply a bit more of a plot here.
Right.
So he has to go through TV/movie themed 3D levels. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. 3D, by the way, 3D platformer. We're no longer stuck in the 2D world. And for good or worse, like it's a very ugly game, in my opinion.
Even in 98, we're still fairly new because, Mario 64 had taken the world by storm and it was set the new bar. And so here we are. 1998.
Everybody trying to reach that bar,
trying to clone it.
Yep. Everybody was doing it. It wasn't just them.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and no. Some were succeeding more than others, right? Like, I still think the Croc game was pretty good.
I think the Croc game is pretty good. I think it's solid in how it's made. This particular one, it's all right.
It just feels like everything's made out of paper in this game. I don't know why.
It's gank. You know, sometimes with the 3D models and stuff, what you would do is you'd almost cheat it where you'd have paper thin type things, like you said, that paper looking. Mm-hmm. Actually, what he's grabbing right now, I think, is some skull mask or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's, once again, all these games, platforming and collectathons, which is fine. And it's actually really good variation on this idea of collecting everything, because each theme has its own collectible item or asset. Mm-hmm. In this case, I don't think we start in the spooky world, but this is the spooky world level. So we got those themes back again, but you're collecting
they're Jason masks. That's the reference.
You're collecting hockey mask and that kind of stuff.
And he kills a Chucky.
And then if you don't kill the head, the stupid body comes to get you. You're collecting remote controls, just like in the first one. I don't know if you mentioned that or not, but that's how you unlock areas so you can get to the next TV screen so you can get sucked in and progress.
I mean, we were talking. We did the whole episode about Banjo-Kazooie, right? Yeah, we did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like three episodes.
It was three episodes. Time is flying like in a weird thing right now. that game is often criticized now as not holding up because it's just collect shit and move to the next thing, collect shit, move to the next thing. But there was a time where this is the loop. This is what you did, and we were happy to be doing it. And Mario established it and everyone copied it. And that's what it was going to be for a long time until people introduced some mechanics that were a little more progression based and, you know, skill based upgrades and things like that would come later. But this game was like those. Spyro, Spyro the Dragon, same thing. You got to go collect Spyro, shit and unlock shit. That was the deal.
Yeah, they couldn't introduce too many new elements here because we are early in the 3D world. We talked about this in the Mario 64 episode, but you gotta ease the player in because they gotta learn how to play. And this did have one of those. This is one of the more obvious things when you're playing these early ones. When you play Mario 64, you walk up in the cloud, he has the little camera on a fish hook and he zooms around you to kind of let you know this is what you're actually controlling. So you're controlling two things, even though you don't ever see the camera, you're controlling that character and he's influenced by collisions just like Mario so that he can't fly into walls and then you would be behind, you know, some planes. You don't want that. So that's kind of, you know, a problem when you're trying to play these games and you get near a wall. If your camera sitting on your character is set too far back, it'll hit walls and it'll get frustrating because you can't see what you're doing and you got to make jumps, which is platforming, and you can't do it because you can't line up. You can't look at the thing you want to jump to. Mm-hmm. So level design is really important in these things. Mm-hmm. And we figured all this camera stuff out later, letting cameras kind of slide forward and come and get, you know,
every game was a step in the right direction, getting that better and better. Eventually we got two sticks made a big difference because you control what you see and, you know, we would get better real quick. By the way, I noticed this about the N64 version, which I'm showing to the chat room right now. It's a little tighter on, you know, the jigglies and whatnot and the tearing, but per usual, it's blurry as shit. Like all the N64 titles seem to look, they all had a blurry look to them, but also they got rid of, or they didn't do the hockey mask. They got these stupid rotating pre-rendered skulls to collect. That's kind of lame.
Yeah. Yeah, it is kind of lame. They took out a lot. They took out not all of Dana Gould stuff. They took out a lot. And part of that wasn't necessarily because of, you know, editing choices from the upper management. It was more like, well, these carts only hold so much. Once again, get over the carts already.
Oh, that's right.
Nintendo
pushing the cart down our throat.
Our Gexy sticky throat.
You're seeing a fight right now, or not a fight, but a part where he's collecting skulls in the PS1 game. There was a baddie in the middle of that and you had to avoid it and fight it. And this version of the same level, there's just missing some of that stuff. It's just
the baddie in the middle of the level really confused me when I was playing this particular area this past week, because it was more of an avoidance. You couldn't destroy the baddie that was in there. You had to avoid it and you had to only do it like when the light was a certain color. So you had to stand in the light and then wait till they finished rotating around you and then you could run.
Yeah.
This probably my least favorite, even though it's got elements of stuff that I like the most. I think the overall experience for this one, still a good experience, but yeah. just kind of fell a little flat because of the gank.
Agreed. That was going it's on. Very ganky. It's yeah. Kind of hard the to jank, look at, to be gank. Honest. It's such a blur fest, man. It makes me feel yeah, like my eyes are, something's wrong with my eyes when I look at it.
They are, man.
I don't like it. Oh, we all got to eat. I'm hungry right now. In fact, I could go for a little bit of Factor meal time. Oh, and we're in the thick of summer, you guys. I don't know if you've checked your watches or your clocks or your calendars. We're in the middle of it, like the hottest part. You might be looking for wholesome, convenient meals to support sunny, active days. Well, Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal kit, can help you do that. Fuel up fast with flavorful, nutritious, ready-to-eat meals. They're sent straight to your door. You'll save time, you'll eat well, and you'll stay on track while trying to reach those hot, sunny goals. Factor even has breakfast items like delicious apple cinnamon pancakes, bacon and cheddar egg bites, and potato egg, bacon, and skillet breakfast. Head to factormeals.com/retro50 and use the code retro50 to get 50% off. I understand you're busy with your summer plans. You don't want to prep, cook, chop, and all that. And let's not even talk about the cleaning up. Throw that all away and use Factor, because in 2 minutes, your food is heated and ready to go. And look, if you're looking for like a good little wellness boost, I could recommend very highly the following. Try their refreshing beverages like cold pressed juices, shakes, and smoothies. These smoothies, man, they're so good. Anyway, this July, we're right in the middle of, get Factor and enjoy eating well without the hassle. Simply choose your meals and enjoy fresh flavor-packed meals delivered straight to that door. Ready in 2 minutes, no prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/retro50 and use the code retro50 to get 50% off. That's code retro50 at factormeals.com/retro50 for 50% off.
Here you are, you're whipping your tail again. I'm not 100% sure on this. There's a long jump that you can do. This kind of like a karate kick, almost like, Liu Kang. It's almost like a karate kick where you kind of lift one leg up and you like jump forward.
What's that kick called?
You know what I'm talking about? You lift both legs up, of course.
That has a name. I forgot the name.
Jumping.
Yeah. I can't remember now.
But anyway, it took me forever to forget how to.
Here's the Saturn version, by the way, of the game I'm playing now.
Oh yeah, what is this one now?
It's a little faster somehow than the PS1 game. I don't know.
Yeah, the Saturn had more sprite rendering abilities, which kind of blows my mind. That this 3D actually looks pretty darn good right now.
I tried, not bad.
Yeah, I tried both, but I used the Mr. FPGA, which is the hardware emulation we've talked about in the past.
And the
core for it is still early in development, so it was kind of ganky. The PlayStation core was solid. I'd like to play this on the real game to see on the real system, see how it works.
Yeah,
but look at all this theming, man. You got all the quips.
We're everything's techno theme now. Yeah, we got some kind of techno business going on.
Yeah, this is the cyber world, I believe. This is the www.com cyberpunk, I believe, area.
That sounds right. Looks like a big circuit board, basically.
In my pocket?
Yeah.
Hello there, my secret friend.
Okay, that's still old shit, but...
That's so old. That's like, the only reason why we know that reference is because we grew up with Bugs Bunny and then may have backtracked. We didn't know the original sources of that.
No, it's like some film noir thing that we were too young to understand. We didn't get it.
Right. So this is what the TVTropes.org in this game is where they started doing that, the other Darrens, because we have a different... British dub actor. This is where Leslie Phillips comes into play. And like I said, that's the guy, that's the Sorting Hat voice most of us probably have heard.
Dana Gould's like, he's still under 60.
Still under 60. Still on the good side of 60.
Yeah, I thought he was for some reason, I thought he was in his 60s, but he was like young buck when he first did this.
Right.
He was like an up and coming comedian guy. He'd done stuff, HBO, Showtime, and all that, but I didn't really know him until Gex, and then after that, I didn't know him again until some voice work on The Simpsons, but the main thing was that Wait, Don't Tell Me NPR trivia show that he would show up on all the time. I think he still does.
He might, sure enough. I haven't watched that in forever, but let me tell you what this game introduced.
Give it.
This is after Austin Powers, and I mean very shortly after Austin Powers. And so they kind of leaned into this. So there's like the overworld for Gex. So Gex has his personality in each of these themes and stuff.
Yeah.
And he interacts with them. And the voice lines are for that. But outside of that, you know, when he's in the real world, he's kind of he's becoming kind of like what he's going to turn into eventually, which is going to kind of be like a spy kind of thing. And so he starts using all of this, yeah, baby, and all this stuff from Austin Powers. Dude. And I'm like, out of all the things that didn't translate well,
yeah.
I think that may be maybe some of the worst stuff because it's already a parody. It's making a parody of a parody.
Exactly. It's too derivative. Yeah. It's like, come on. That's the part I could not stomach with any of these Gex games and why I'm not that excited about remasters, even if they end up looking amazing. Do I really want to listen to that choo-cha the whole time? I don't know if I do.
I don't think they definitely. So I went through like all the sound clips of possible things they could have said. And I'd heard a lot of people say there was racist remarks. And I'm like, okay, I've seen some of the racist remarks. There's like a lot of homophobic remarks and stuff. I'm like, I haven't necessarily seen anything like too blatant. Like, I will give you one here. Let me give you one or two that are in this game.
I know the cartoon has a nice boomer in there. Hold on.
Now, I haven't heard all of them, so I can't say for sure, but I'm still digging through.
Let me play this just real fast. Hold on.
Well, hello. I'll have sashimi, and the lady will have the broccoli chicken.
Yes.
I'm hungry, damn it.
Because he's fighting Chinese people, so he's like, I'm going to order Chinese food.
There's like some Chinese people in there, I think, doing things, and there's music that's going. So definitely some racist stuff there.
I don't know if it's so much racism. It's just kind of just stereotypes and stuff.
Stereotypes, you know? Yeah. So I think here's some of the stuff he said. So some of these aren't bad, like all this technology and Shatner still can't get a decent hairpiece. You know, a little jab at Shatner. That's fine. That's as much fun as being Mike Tyson's cellmate on Valentine's Day. Okay. Mike Tyson was in jail for a while.
Whoa.
Okay, that's a little blue, right? A little blue.
Sure.
Yeah. Kermit was wrong. It's not easy being green. That's nothing wrong with that. Hey, I feel like I'm trapped in Boy George's pants. Okay.
What? What does that even mean?
Right. So
I don't know what that means. That needs more context when you hear that.
I don't either. I don't know. Hey, I feel like I'm trapped in Boy George's pants. Is a party down there or something? He didn't really gyrate. I think Michael Jackson's pants may would have been... But even that still seems pretty rough. Being anybody's pants is probably a bad idea, but it's just a lot of blue humor in this game.
Yeah.
And I don't think, but like most of what you just heard me say, I would say about 80% of it is just bad references. It would be pretty easy to take out the offensive stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know about the whole levels and stuff. No offense.
It wouldn't like be that. Hard. I think they'd be fine. I think the levels are fine. My biggest question is, does the gameplay hold up enough for me to warrant buying that? I don't know. Because I don't know.
Justify.
Yeah, and I assume the first game is going to be the 2D platformer. The whole thing comes in a trilogy, so we're going to get that. We'll get the second game, which is 3D. Mm-hmm. And then we'll get the third 3D game, which we'll talk about in a second, Deep Cover Gecko.
Right.
That's the game where they really lean. Oh, that's where the Game Boy Color came from. That's where that was. Deep cover Gecko.
Okay. Yeah. The Carbon Engine guys, I heard some interviews in this past week too, and they always try to not only bring the trilogies there to life, you know, to make it, you know, a little work better in their Carbon Engine and that kind of stuff and look better and all that. They also try to add little bonuses and things. So we'll see. There's some unused content out there. This floating around, maybe they'll put some of that, you know, some of those unused assets, maybe we'll do some interviews or something. I think it'll make it something that'll be interesting to somebody who is nostalgic for this. I would certainly, you know, the Spyro stuff, that was really good. I really enjoyed seeing, and you know, these aren't all the same. These aren't all from the Carbon Engine guys, but the Spyro stuff trilogy, as well as seeing the Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah, the remakes on Nitro. All of that, the Nitro boosted racer thing, those are really nice updates.
Yeah.
Like, they're not just crap, you know, make them widescreen and up the res. They look really good. So if they're talking then it might be worth checking back in. You know?
I definitely think that first Gex game is a 2D platformer.
Yeah.
Freaking pretty impressive. So
maybe just up-res it. I say, clean it up, up-res it.
Yeah, just cleaned up, up-res a little bit.
Yeah.
The themes are fun. I like it.
Yeah, and then the other two, just give me full, like the Spyro games, give me full 3D redos, and you're good.
Yeah.
Real quick here, we're going to talk about Deep Cover. Now, this is, I got to play some audio from this because this game has a real life lady in it. Like an actual.
Oh, wait, real life lady, some full motion video for full the PlayStation motion video. 1, please.
Yes, it's pretty horrible. I'll play a bit of it while I play the audio. It won't actually match up people in the chat, but you'll get the idea. So here you go. Whoops, that isn't worth it.
Got his pants back. What's this? Ladies and gentlemen, I've just been handed some late breaking news. Special Agent Extra, head of the TV Terrorist Defense Unit, and star of many of my private dreams, is apparently missing.
Jerry Springer!
Agent Extra was last seen wearing 8-inch pumps and a red bathing suit. Her current whereabouts are unknown.
Gex. Gex.
Agent Extra? You poor kidnapped minx.
Hey, Tiger. Guess where I am? Trapped in the media dimension.
Okay. It's bad.
Yeah. So that's our Baywatch actress, right?
I don't know. That's not.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait a minute.
She was a Playmate of the Month at one point in time. And then she went on to do Baywatch.
What's her name? It's not Tommy Lee's girlfriend.
No. It's not Pamela.
Pamela Anderson. Okay. It's somebody else.
No,
her voice is similar, but it ain't her.
Yeah. It's Marlise Andrada, I believe is how you say it. And she is. So now we have fully leaned in for some reason. I don't know why. I guess because the Austin Powers thing was so such a hit. Yeah. Enter the Gecko.
Yeah.
They decided to make the overworld part. You know, he's retired, but he's an agent. So he's a deep undercover gecko agent. Mm. But he has a turtle butler called he's Alfred. So he's like he's kind of like Batman.
Uh-huh.
And he's kind of his place is kind of like more like Batman.
And he has a little bit of a little bit of a like a secret lair and all that.
Yeah, he's got a secret lair like Batman. Yeah. But then he's also 007. So he's kind of all over the place with this one, which is supposed to be because it's a bunch of, you know, it's just a bunch of stuff thrown in together, a bunch of popular culture stuff all mashed up into this gecko shaped.
Oh, wow. I just noticed her second to last credit since she retired from all acting of any kind was this. And then she did something called Love Stinks for
this
some episode. And then that's it. We're done.
Well, let me tell you what. She didn't get paid nearly enough for what her work, because this game almost exclusively was probably sold by her being on the cover.
Yeah,
because it sex sells, man. Yep. In Gex 3 Deep Cover Gecko, and she's not even like doing anything like risque or anything.
No,
but she's, having your cartoon character next to a, you know, a physical real life woman,
pretty lady,
moved a lot of those units.
Yeah. And also, I will give the game credit. I think the engine's much improved. It's a funner, tighter experience. I liked how this one played more. I don't like the themes of it, though. The themes drove me crazy.
The themes are, they didn't. Oh, God. And the bad thing is, on all these, you have to start somewhere. And as you collect things and you collect remotes, you unlock other levels. That continues here. You start out, you have to start. I didn't want to do it. I was like, I don't want to go to Christmas Land. But that's like one of the first places you have to go to start finding remotes so you can get to the cooler ones, which is what you're playing on screen, which I really love is this firefighter kind of thing going on. And I really like that one. Is it Mission Control? No, that's anyway.
I forgot
that. I really like the one here. You're dressed Gex. He starts getting outfits. So he gets to wear outfits themed for each levels. And it's I like it a lot as far as that goes. But I'm with you. The actual world itself.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem
just the James Bond stuff's just not interesting to me. It's just like
it's not me it's either, cheesy. And it just prompted them to keep on making more and more Austin Powers jokes every second they got, especially when he's talking with it through the in the full motion video stuff with Agent Extra. It's not great.
No, it's not. It's unfortunate because I think there's stuff to mine there, right? You can have some fun. Oh, yeah. I just don't think this thing knew what it was doing.
The levels themselves are much, I like the designs a lot better. The second one, Enter the Gecko, had a lot more open world stuff, which was good. But a lot of times it felt like it was too sparse, or if there was anything there, it was just like they threw a bunch of assets of, like, you know, whatever was the theme for that one. He was like, hey, collecting cans this time around to get power ups.
Yeah.
And this one, you know, the levels felt really smart. I felt like I was really discovering things and was really being challenged. And it, just like you said, it was a lot tighter. They adjusted the camera angle a little bit, I think, because you're a little further back from Gex, which you're controlling as a third person. And I kind of like that a little better. It seemed like it didn't
clips less. You get less stuff getting in your face that shouldn't be in your face, that kind of thing. They raised it a little bit, I think, in the rear.
Yeah.
They probably did. It's a better a better playing game. I just think the themes aren't as good as the previous one.
Yeah, it's not nearly as the cartoon themes in the second one were kind of almost annoying, though, because I think, isn't there one like the Toon World? It's there's Bugs Bunny. It's not Bugs Bunny, but it's Elmer Fudd. And it's just like
some of them were
slow bullets chasing you. I'm like,
they were just kind of like, hey, this guy looks like Bugs Bunny.
Right.
So you had to just sort of, you know, but, what do you call that? What do you call it when you have to, like, I guess park your brain and realize that brands are hard and nobody's going to give you the rights to their IP. So they got to make a fake Bugs Bunny. It's just how it works.
Yeah. But you're right. Let me look at some of the themes here. This one time around, the levels are like Mission Control, which is sci-fi, Oregon Trail, which is Oregon Trail.
Yeah.
Oregon. I just got that. Horror, Clueless in Seattle. My Three Goons is a gangster movie. War as Heck is a war movie.
There's
and
a whole
Totally Scrooge, which is where you started. And so stupid. But you got to make do all of it so you can always Final Fight Riz. That's how you get out of
that's the idea. But there's a whole game called Oregon Trail now.
Oregon Trail. Yeah.
No, I mean Oregon. There's one called Oregon about zombies.
Oh, there's one called Oregon Trail?
Yeah,
that's hilarious.
I gave it away on TMS one day, and it's just like a zombie take on Oregon Trail. It's the same idea, but that. Even uses crappy old graphics. But I wonder who's
this close is how I came to suggesting we do Oregon Trail this week. I was like, we gotta drop back a little bit next week. And I'm like, no.
You know what? At some point, we could do that. I think we should, because I don't have the same connection to it a lot of people do. I thought it was an educational title that only you did in school, but I was wrong about that.
Yeah.
And I played the new one. It's on Steam now and was on phones and stuff for a while. That game's real good. And
it's neat.
Yeah. Now I kind of want to dig down into the whole phenomenon of where that all came from.
Oh, yeah. Agreed.
And it turns out there's a lot of games I like now that have aspects of those games, and I didn't know that they were kind of responsible for those ideas.
Oh yeah.
So we'll do that one day. Why not?
We'll get to that one. Yeah. We'll get to that one. But if we finished talking about Gex first.
Oh hell yeah, Gex.
He's also a Hugh Hefner type too. I forgot about that. I just saw his little outfit. I think is he Karate Man here?
I think like around a ninja.
In the hub world, I think he's got that Hugh Hefner robe on, right? The little red. Yeah.
Yeah, and this one he's a ninja or something.
Yeah,
I think.
By the way, if you didn't know this, Gex is super rich.
Oh, he's got all the money.
Yeah,
which makes no sense because the first two they don't talk about that at all. But suddenly he's rich. So,
well, no, he was actually rich in the first one. I didn't know this either. Yeah, I didn't know this.
Tell you that? I don't remember that in the story at all.
Yeah, that's right. Because you know why? I cannot find the PS1 instruction manual anywhere, but I did find the 3DO version, and it prattles on for like 4 pages.
Really?
About Gex's backstory. And it is it's the most crazy, convoluted crap ever. Like, Gex, his dad is working at NASA and he explodes. He's also a gecko. He explodes and then his mom starts dating. He retreats to watching TV and then his mom starts dating this guy and this guy's trying to get him out and he won't go out. And so he ended up getting into a big fight and his mom throws away all the TV. So he runs away. He becomes homeless. And then so much later, his mom comes by, drives up to the limousine. One of his uncles died, left him a bunch of money. And so he gets his part. Wow. And then he moves around for a little bit. Then he moves back to Maui and then buys a bunch of TVs and stuff.
It goes this is on forever. Huge. I'm looking at the manual. I'm looking at the 3DO manual. It is insane how much story there is.
It is crazy. And it just rambles. It is pointless. There's no character development. It's just one random crazy shit after the next. It's just, I'm like, okay.
Also, why do you put the jump button on C? Flip that over there. Put it on A.
Yeah, yeah. What's wrong with you, 3DO?
Yeah, you dumbasses. Okay, well, that's interesting. There is a whole... They even start it with, Hawaii, a lush tropical paradise. Famous for many things. Magnum P.I., Hawaiian Eye, and that TV show starring Jack Lord. Oh, Jack Lord's
Jack
hair.
Jack Lord's hair. That's right. Quips. The quippins. This is almost funnier than Cocker's Bad Fur Day.
Oh, yeah. Well, another one that I'm not sure is as funny as we think it was. there's some other stuff worth mentioning. Whiplash probably could have been Gex 4. This was a game built for PlayStation 2 and Xbox where a long-tailed weasel named Spanx and a rabbit named Redmond went around and did some business.
Kind of the same thing, except they weren't like jumping through TVs and stuff. They had another mode of travel, but it's just, you know, it's all just a 3D platformer, the same stuff.
Yeah, it does feel, there's a vibe from it that feels ripped from those headlines.
But it's because that's what they were originally doing. They were developing a Gex 4, and then they decided that the brand wasn't strong enough for whatever reason, and they ended up working all that into Whiplash. Didn't make sense for Gex to have a rabbit. I don't know.
Yeah. What was this good? I don't remember this game at all. Zero context for me.
Seems like I played a little bit of it. You know, it's just fine. It was good. It was good enough. Okay. Yeah, you know.
Yeah. It's all right. Passes.
One of these.
Okay. It's one of these.
Yeah.
I feel like we're having a reckoning with what we thought was good.
Right.
In the early 3D days, like we're having to look back and go, oh, I don't know, Mario 64, you kind of controlled weird. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. We've gotten so good at these things and they need to be seen and recognized for the innovators they are. But we have come a long way, man.
Yeah. I mean, I did like Whiplash and how it, you know, you got to use the main game mechanic, which is just whipping the crap out of people with your bunny. Right. Yeah. That's satisfying. You know,
everybody likes to hit shit with their bunny. Yeah. I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Who doesn't like doing that?
Also, man, that PS2 is a big upgrade over the one, isn't it?
Oh, such a big upgrade.
Two is still the highest selling console of all time.
Yeah, that's it, man. And not likely to be unseated just yet.
There was also a Gex Jr. prototype that never went anywhere.
I played this.
No way, really? Yeah, I'd heard of this, I didn't know it was playable.
I think some guy acquired it through appropriate ways, apparently, what he says on his archive.org posting of this. But I downloaded it. It's very early prototype, early. Like, there's the hub world, and you are your little Gex with a little red striped shirt and hat turned around backwards and that kind of stuff. And you're I don't think there's as much story as far as, you know, being addicted to TV or anything. I think you're just at a TV facility and you're jumping through and playing.
So wait, does Gex have kids or is this Gex at a young age? What's the idea?
No story opening, just you just plopped in and you're a little gecko, and you know, he looks like Gex Jr. just like you would think he would look like. nothing surprising there. You're collecting remote stuff and you're jumping in and going into different Toon worlds and that kind of stuff. I think the idea was they finally realized that Gex really it's kind of an odd look because it looks like it's targeted towards kids, but then you got Dana Gould saying all these
super adult
inappropriate things. So yeah, I think they were trying to go, okay, what if we did actually sell this to kids?
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Gex Jr.
Never happened.
Never
will, is my guess.
Mm-mm.
They're not doing that as part of this remake. They're not
It'd be interesting. I don't know if they have any further prototypes than this one I played, but I guess it's a possibility they could have, you know, they could have done something with it.
I suppose so. Well, there you go. A deep look at Gex. Go play it and see what you think. See if we're wrong about our hot takes. Maybe we're right about them. I don't know. But it's a piece of history. Ooh. Yeah.
We talked about this earlier. But that fan-made thing of Gex really made me want a Gex 90s cartoon. That was amazing. That video, flipping Ding Dong, did back, in 2022?
Yeah, that looked great.
You haven't seen that?
It looks good. It's stupid, but good.
Oh, it's so stupid. It's
but they nail the feeling, though, right, of the era? They totally nail it. Speaking of VHS, there's a bunch of VHS effects in there.
I love that. It's constantly doing plays. It looks like they pretended like they recorded a 90s episode of Gex cartoon that never existed and played it. It was pretty fun.
I beat this. I didn't mention it, but I beat the first Gex on the 3DO all the way.
Did you really? Now you had a 3DO or you had a friend?
I had a 3DO. I had one.
Nice.
And I sold it to a friend, though. When I got my PlayStation, I sold my 3DO to my friend for $100.
You fool.
And he got two games.
I don't think so. You're not a fool because, look, you can pick up one now for $200.
Yeah, I don't think it would have been. They haven't appreciated that much in value, but I gave him that for $100, two games. One was Return Fire.
Anything, you won.
Yeah, I probably won. Return Fire, and I think maybe Gex. Oh, three games. I gave him Gex, Return Fire, and Road Rash, all three of those. So he got a really good deal.
Yeah, he got a good deal. It was still a good deal. So,
and I used that money to buy a multi-tap for my PlayStation 1.
See, that's even better because that's actually something you would actually play instead of the 3DO, which
was useful.
Probably never.
But here's my point. Again. When I started playing Gex, I remember feeling like, ooh, this is the next big thing. This is going to challenge Mario. This is going to challenge Bandicoots and all this stuff. And by the end, I felt like it was just kind of average and it wasn't really challenging much. It was just kind of like, nah, it's fine.
They do what a lot of these 2D platformers do. They just, as you go along, they just increase the number of enemies on screen until it just becomes more and more challenging until you just like want to pull your hair out.
But, yeah.
It's good.
It's absolutely correct. Well, there you have it. It's time for us to play a little game.
Destroy it.
We're going to play Guess My Game. We take some old audio from an old game. We play it and we see if we can stump each other into either getting it right or wrong. And my recollection is neither of us have a great record leading up to today.
So we've been kind of sometimes we toss softballs and sometimes we toss rocks right in people's heads and we never guess them. So,
yep. And also, I'm noticing that you've highlighted your field here. Does that mean you forgot what you submitted to the thing today?
Of course. What do you think I'm doing right now? As you speak, I am scrambling.
I love it so much. What the hell
I put in here this morning.
One of my favorite things is you forgetting what game you picked for Guess My Game. I love that.
Well, I can't write it in there. You'll see it.
Yeah, no, you're right. And
you
I can't
dirty,
either.
Dirty dog.
The only reason I know is I have a separate note on a different app that just reminds me. So I feel you. Yeah, chat rooms just go straight to Choplifter when Brian does this. All right. I'm going to start with mine. This is audio from the year 1982. I will tell you, this is the Atari 2600. So we're going way back.
But going way back. Speaking of, we talked about it earlier, how large it is to download, an entire collection of something old.
Yeah.
The 2600 collection, the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's like
12K
megabytes. It's like 4 megabytes.
Oh, for the whole library? Holy crap.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember exactly. Don't quote me on that, but it is just crazy stupid.
That's embarrassingly low.
Right.
I mean, you can
download the whole thing in about 5 seconds.
Yeah. You got to go ahead and in time by 40 years to have this make the difference it does. But man,
right.
What the hell, dude? All right, well, here's the game. See if you can figure it out. I'll warn you, it's annoying as hell because Atari 2600.
Well, it's Atari 2600. Yeah. What did you think?
They're really bad. So here you go. Yeah. I may have given it away with that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is a no-brainer. I've got like a couple of million of these in a pit somewhere.
Ah, crap. So what is it called, Brian?
That is E.T., the extraterrestrial.
You know why I thought of that one is because you were talking about all this VHS stuff, and I thought, that's a good one to pick. But I shouldn't have left so much music at the top. That totally blew it.
People crap on E.T., but I mean, I didn't purchase it, so I just played it. My cousin had it, and I thought it was fine.
Well, because we're dumb. We were stupid kids. We didn't know.
Yeah, I played it. I mean, you had to click the little phone parts.
Yeah.
I mean, and it was frustrating because you would fall in the hole. But so many games were like that anyway. There was tons of games that were just as frustrating as E.T. to me. So people give it shit all the time. And I'm like, this is just as frustrating as a million other games of this generation. I was like, whatever.
You know what I love, though, is that guy made E.T., but he also made one of the greatest, maybe the greatest Atari 2600 games ever made. His name was Howard Scott Warshaw. He was a single designer and developer that made all the games he made when he was at Atari. He's usually a one guy deal.
Yeah.
And he made E.T., but prior to that, he made the best 2600 game ever made, and that was Yar's Revenge.
Yeah.
So we knew he knew how to make stuff. He knew stuff.
They knew he was competent. The problem was that the guys up top, this is all guys up top problem, by the way. This is all them.
Yeah,
because they were like, oh, we got Spielberg and he wants E.T. and he's agreed to do it. And if we can just show him what we got, and it's like, okay, he's greenlit it. All right, we need it out by Christmas and we got to have it done in, you know, so many weeks. Go.
Yep. And he almost, one of my favorite things about this guy's story is he almost finished two games right before the video game crash of 83, where everything got wiped out and everything got sold off. He had to stop production on a game called Saboteur, which no one's ever seen, but it was almost finished. And he had a game based on the A-Team, the TV show.
Oh my God. I would have loved to have had an A-Team.
I know, right?
I can just see a single bit, Mr. T.
Yep. But all of his games, including E.T. at the time, until everyone realized how bad it was and they got rid of all of them. He had sold over 1 million copies of Yar's Revenge, 1 million copies of E.T., 1 million. I mean, he was a legit dude, and he didn't get really paid very well for it.
No, he didn't. None of them did at that time. None of them. It was a shame. Yeah. That was all up top men. Yeah. That's they screwed that up.
But he's 65 now, chilling in Colorado. He's fine.
Does he care?
Yeah, he doesn't care.
He's laughing it up.
Yeah, he's like, E.T., terrible game.
6 weeks of my life, I'll never get back.
And someone in the chat mentioned it, but there's a documentary called
There's a great documentary on the E.T., like the quest to get to the E.T. And
here it is. Atari Game Over, this one's called. It's very good.
Okay.
If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. Yeah, you should watch it. He's in it.
Okay, I have to watch that one. Okay.
That guy's great. Okay. And he did the first Easter eggs, that guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good job. Oh, there was Easter eggs in the first Gex we didn't talk about. But it wasn't good things.
that's fantastic.
Several developers were unhappy with how things were going. And so he put like a big old Easter egg in there that had like some of the upper men. He put their information in there, totally doxed them.
Doxed his employers?
Yeah, let these people know this sucks butthole.
Oh man, that's rough.
Yeah,
I love that though. Well, everyone's, I don't know. I feel like every game's got something like that in there. You know?
Oh yeah.
Why wouldn't you? You're programming.
Why wouldn't you?
Hot coffee. It's no-brainer. I mean, that hot coffee thing was supposed to be a mode, but still.
Yeah.
Man, remember when people flipped out about that? You know what they do in video games now? Where's all the flip out now? It's like not even close,
dude. No. What were they?
And that was like 03 or something?
We've hit maximum freak out. There's just no more freak out left.
I know I'm out, dude. I don't have any left.
I'm out. No more freaking out. I ain't got the energy.
You don't have energy or time for anymore?
What's that?
Anything other people want me to do. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
No, I'm with you.
You could call me and say, hey, I want to do this thing. And I'd say, oh, okay, cool. Let's do it. Like, I don't mean in that way. I mean if the neighbor's having a party, and they're like, Scott, you should be in charge of A or B. And I'd go, I ain't doing shit.
Bump that.
I'm not coming.
You mean voluntolds?
No, yeah, voluntolds.
Told me nothing.
I don't do any of those anymore. Yeah. And I have no problem to their face saying, nah, I'm good. I'm not doing that. Like, I have had a real flip in my life.
Oh, yeah, dude. There gets a point in your life. We're edging into that part of life where it's like, nah.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Noah's not a problem for us.
Not anymore. No, like even if we get a good 30 years left in our lives or whatever we get.
Right.
I'm using it how I want to use it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't care if it sounds a little selfish. I spent a lot of time in the first third to half of my life.
Yeah.
Trying to please everybody. I don't want to do that anymore.
I'm a good social person. I do all the social things and
that's right.
All the social etiquette.
It's me now. It's my time.
It's me. It's my time.
A little bit of Scott time. Get out my way, bitch.
Get out the way. Get out the way.
All right. Let's do this. I'm going to play your clip. All right. We'll see if I can figure it out. This
Game
is
Boy Color 1990/9.
All right.
And I've looked it up and I know what it is now.
All right. Excellent. Here we go. Kind of grooving on it.
Oh yeah. You got three questions.
All right, Nintendo property or no?
No.
We'll take from that a third party game. Side scrolling?
Side scrolling, baby.
Based on a popular IP?
I think so.
Ah, shit. But I mean,
I'll give you one more since that's kind of almost a little.
But like objectively, is it based on a popular IP? Like,
oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I mean, there was three of these. So, yeah.
Oh, that's a good hint. There are three of them.
Yeah.
This
is the second one of these three.
Let me hear this again. It's the second of three. That means it was successful. Oh my
gosh. The first one of these was not released on the Game Boy Color.
It was not?
No.
So it was just Game Boy then.
Yeah. Well, no. It wasn't on the Nintendo at all.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. Although I still don't know. all right, I'm going to just guess. This is Batman, part two of Batman.
Nice. Close.
Damn it.
We didn't get to Batman until the third one. This is Gex, Enter the Gecko.
Shut up.
For no. Game Boy Color.
It is? You cheater.
I snuck it in there. I snuck it in on you.
Didn't I do this last week to you? I think it's fair play.
I think you did it too at one point in time.
Yeah, I did this to
you
last
week. Payback.
Yeah, I played.
Payback, mother.
I played one of the things that were in the thing. I even played some of that game. Oh, no, this is the one I didn't play. Never mind.
It's so forgettable, though. Yeah. That's exactly what I said. It's so forgettable.
Yeah, this is the one I didn't play, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah. I played it for like half a minute.
I
was like, I'm
out. That's really funny. So this is that GBA game we talked about earlier. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, Brian 1, Scott 0 starting today. That's how this works.
That's perfect. Good job.
Good job, everybody.
Welcome to the treasure room.
Oh. I got an email from Jelly Bean. Yo, Jelly Bean. What up?
Jelly beans.
I'm in a mood. PlayRetroShow@gmail.com is where Jelly Bean sent this and says the following. Hey, Retro. Oh, I like that. Hey, Retro.
Oh, hey, Retro.
That's a fun way of doing emails. I think
it is. I like it. Call us Hey, Retro all the time.
Hey,
I like
Retro. I just finished the Banjo-Kazooie episode, and Scott mentioned that he wanted a Mortal Kombat kart racer. It exists in Mortal Kombat Armageddon on the PlayStation 2.
What?
There is a minigame, which is full kart racer called Motor Kombat. Might be worth checking out. So we're going to look at this now. I did not remember this. I also didn't play that one, so that might be why.
Right. This is on the PS2. Yeah, I didn't play this either.
PlayStation 2. Armageddon was not a good fighting game, but I didn't realize it had a kart racer in it.
That's a no-brainer. So our brilliance has been usurped.
Yeah, we've been usurped. Here it is. Wait. No, I can't find it. Everything's Mortal Kombat 1 on YouTube right now. Where is the kart racer?
See, Mortal, if you had called it what I wanted to,
racing
Mortal
game.
Kart Bat,
Mortal
it would
Kart
be a lot easier
Bat.
To find.
How about just Mortal? No, wait a minute. Kart, just Kart Combat, 2Ks, like that. Doesn't have to have, you have Mortal in there, you know? Okay, here it is. Mortal Kombat.
Oh, Jesus, it's hard to find. Jesus, nobody ever played it.
It is hard to find. Is this it? Oh, I think this might be it.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, chat. Let's have a look.
Shut that guy up, though. Jeezy's talking. Shut up.
There's, okay, we select a track. Okay. Definitely PlayStation 2 era looking graphics. So this was built into Armageddon? Really?
Yeah.
Okay, let's see what the racing looks like. Oh, this looks all right. I mean, I'm watching Scorpion race a Scorpo car and,
I'm seeing that. That's all right.
I love it.
I love when they're doing the drive-by. I do like drive-by.
Yeah. This isn't what I ultimately want, but this doesn't look so bad.
Man, they just put this as a little crap side note. Come on, man.
Yeah. Make a full game, you cowards.
Make a full game. Even this is not bad. Start here.
Yeah, they're cowards. Make a whole game.
You cowards. You bunch of cowards.
All right.
Finish him.
Well, I like the clarification, though, because I did not know this until we got this email.
I neither. Now I want to see if I got a PS2. I wonder if I can order this.
You probably can't. Armageddon's around. eBay, whatever.
Yeah. Let's see how much this thing is.
Or get a ROM somewhere.
Let's see how much they value this thing on eBay.
Yeah. What do the eBay gods say about the value of Mortal,
right. What
Mortal
are they thinking
Kombat?
Here?
Or what is it? Mortal,
Mortal Kart? No,
motor.
That's the thing I said.
Motor. It's Motor Kombat, and it's on.
Motor. That's it.
But you're looking for Mortal Kombat Annihilation, which is technically MK4 or something.
Annihilation, not Armageddon, or is it Armageddon? Shit. Armageddon. Combat. That's what the email says anyway.
Armageddon.
Premium
you're right.
edition.
Yep, it's Armageddon. Oh, there's a what do you what's the premium for?
$60, too much.
Let's see. $16.99
for just the disc or $24.99 for complete in box. Ooh, yes. With the registration card. Well, I gotta get that one.
When this first came out, it was rated 7.8. So that's not bad.
$120 premium steelbook edition. Sony.
Holy Moser.
$120.
Yeah, yeah.
You sure like your game.
We don't want that shit. That's
I don't want that shit.
No good. No. We don't like that.
Yeah, that's not bad. I can do that. That's like $14.99. That's not bad.
Yeah, it's not terrible. There are worse things to spend your time with. Okay. Oh, the new Pikmin got a really good review. Weird. I'm not really into Pikmin.
How's that weird? You don't like anything?
I didn't like Pikmin. I'm not a fan of like gather up a bunch of little dudes and make them do a thing. It's not really my thing.
It's kind of like when I was growing up and Magnum PI would come on. I'm like, I don't want to watch Magnum PI. And then 15 minutes into it, I'm like, you're hooked mustache guy.
I do that sometimes. Yeah. You know what? That's a good comparison. I'll do that with a video game I don't actually really like playing that much. And I find myself still playing it. So
that's how Pikmin is. Every time I'm like, I don't want to play Pikmin. I'll be playing Pikmin. I'm like, oh, I'm having fun.
I just don't like this whole, I need 20 of you to move this ball. It's, I don't know. Something about it.
Right.
Something about it always rubs me wrong. Can't figure out why. But I'm glad for people who love it. All right. Sorry, I just noticed Brian wrote, son of a butthole, you did it.
Yeah, son of a butthole, you did it.
That's it for that. All right, our next discussion is going to be Smash TV and Total Carnage. Do you guys remember these games? Total Carnage is kind of a spiritual successor to Smash TV. But Smash TV is OG as hell. I loved that game.
Classic.
Lots of arcade quarters put in there. It's responsible for my modern day love of dual stick shooters. I don't even know. I can't even imagine video game trajectory life without Smash TV being right in the middle, in the middle of it.
So I didn't play Smash TV at the arcade very often. We didn't have one. Later on, I got to play it when it finally made its way back around the second time.
Yeah.
Then our arcade's closed. I played it. I was trying to remember which platform I played it on. It was on everything.
Yeah, everybody had it. And the version, the SNES version, I think is the one I spent the most time with outside of arcade. But lots of arcade, lots of quarters. That game and I got along real well.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll talk about that, Smash TV and Total Carnage, next week on Play Retro, which there will be a show next week. I'm off to a family reunion for the weekend, but I am back by then. So
you'll be playing some Smash TV at the family reunion.
I wish.
I'm smashing some TVs.
Instead, I'm going to want to smash an actual TV because I'm going to be so annoyed with certain relatives. Not all of them. A couple of them. Anyway, that'll be us next week, and that'll be great. I'm very much excited about that. In the meantime, I would like to thank some brand new patrons who joined us this very week, and their names are easy to read, so I'm going to read them. Lord Ampersand. That's cool. If he doesn't have a t-shirt with a big old ampersand on it, then he's living wrong. Get that done. Jeremy Allen, DP, and Michael Burrier. These folks have joined us here recently, and you can be like them and take advantage of our no commercial feed that we put up on there, our pre-show content every week, and there is some this week. Ours this week was great. You guys are going to love it.
Yeah.
Monthly benefits that you can only get if you sign up today at Patreon.
And me playing my stupid master system. I've done it a bunch of times.
Oh, yeah. More extra video up there. That's right. So go check all that out. That, again, is patreon.com/playretro.
Yeah.
All right. I think it's going to do it. Brian, you have anything you'd like to add? Oh, you know what? Go to our website, frogpants.com/playretro. And the reason you wanted to do that is all the links are there, like our email, the text line, all the ways to contact us, all the archives, all that stuff is there. All right. A link to the Patreon, all of it. It's all there.
I'd like to see us get the amount of feedback that you used to get in gaming magazines. I like for people to say, hey, retro, and just like you share your stories. Send us your stupid drawings that you made of your favorite game characters, like in crayon. You know what I mean?
Into that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
We should talk to Zarek in the community about something. He's good at that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll think about it. But we love making the show. We hope you love listening to it. That is going to do it for us. Between now and the next time we talk, please go play something retro, and we'll see you then.
Get more at frogpants.com.
For me? You shouldn't have. Sweet, like candy.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered.
Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Tsinis.
Kayla Itsinis. I'm Kayla Itsinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.